Thank you all very much for coming. And do we live more than once? First thing is to consider whether I'm the body or I'm something else. And the Vedic sages look at it and say, well, the body has no consciousness on its own. There's consciousness within the body. And that's my actual self. Body's a thing like any of these other machines. Rubber bands and sticky tape put together. But the consciousness within the body is of a different nature. And you can't create it. There's no one who can just create consciousness. No scientist has done it. Am I loud enough, by the way? Okay. No scientist has created consciousness. And you can't destroy consciousness. You can't cut it, you can't dry it, you can't blow it away, you can't set it on fire. So the sages of Vedic knowledge, they say that consciousness is permanent. Consciousness is eternal, or the soul. Say Atma or consciousness or the soul, whatever you like. That soul can't be, it's never born, it never dies, it can't be created, can't be destroyed. It lives forever. Does that make sense? Okay. So then, if it's always existing, then the question is, now we see it, or we see, you know, the package. I can't actually see the soul, but I see that you're there because you're talking, you're walking, you're thinking, you're doing things. These are all signs of consciousness. But now you're here. So where were you before? And where will you be next? Just like now you're in this room. So I know that you didn't just pop into existence when you walked into the room. You were someplace else. And it's not that when you walk out the door, you're gone. You'll be someplace else. Yeah? So then the question is, where were we before we came into this life? And where will we be when we go? So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a very simple picture. He says that at one time, we all had a child's body. Right? Now we have, you have, the body of young people. And later, like me, you'll have the body of an old person. So that you is the consciousness, is the soul. And it's changing bodies from the child's body to the young person's body to the old body. You're moving from one to the next to the next. We don't notice it because the changes are very slight from day to day. But some relative comes and says, oh, you've gotten so big. Right? I haven't seen you for a year. You've gotten so big. They see the change. We look in the mirror every day and we see the same thing. Right? But there's actually a change going on. So we're moving from body to body to body. So Krishna says, when we die, what is that death? It's another change of body. This whole body becomes finally unworkable, too old to use. You're like a car, you know, you patch it up, you replace some parts, you bang something together. Finally, you say, forget it. Unusable. And then you have to go to another car. So this machine, that's what it is, it's a machine. The machine finally wears out, it becomes unusable, past beyond repair. Then I have to leave it. So then nature provides another machine, a new machine. So that means there's a body not yet existing, but about to exist. It's there in the form of a seed. So the soul is transferred to the seed of the new body, and then the new body comes out. And then we begin our life again. Does that make sense? It does, huh? Any problems with that? That's the advantage of a teacher's college. You're all smart. Okay. Yeah, so this is what's happening. We're going from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, from body to body to body. And we forget. I don't remember my previous lifetime. But that doesn't mean I wasn't there. Anyone remember when you were in the womb of your mother? None, right? Anyone doubt that you were there? No. Okay. Then, any questions about it? No. Yeah? We're going to be reborn again. Yeah. Okay. How are we reborn again? Just like, kind of like the way a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. He changes his body. Puts aside the old one and takes a new one. Except that this change of body is not quite so easy or so always so nice. There's so many different forms of body. And the soul is subtle. Here's the way it happens. Our consciousness takes us. What our mind is thinking of takes us to the next body. Now, you can see that actually in your life, because like now you're in teacher's college. How did you get here? You worked hard, exactly. You worked hard, you had your mind fixed on it, and here you are. And now, if you stay with your mind fixed on it, you'll graduate, and then you'll go into, actual teaching. Yeah? Because your mind's that way. So if someone said, I'm out of here, I don't want to be a teacher anyway, okay, then your mind takes you someplace else. Maybe it takes you to engineering college, or it takes you into business. We follow our minds. Sometimes a person's mind is uncontrolled and the mind is dragging him all over the place. Tuesday he wants to be an engineer, Friday he wants to be a teacher, Monday he wants to be a rock musician, Tuesday he wants to die. Mind is like helter skelter. You get extreme cases and, 1 minute the person's this, the next minute the person's that. Then you send them to a medical professional. Some people's minds are like that, really, right? Boom, 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 boom. But generally the mind is going in a certain direction throughout our life. Sometimes it's going this way, sometimes it's going that way. We're accumulating different thoughts. We're accumulating different feelings. We're accumulating different desires. And that all adds up to our mindset at the time of death. When we leave this body, we'll have a certain, something's going to be in our mind. And according to what it is, our next destination is there. The mind carries us to the next life. Just as here, we're all in bodies, but it's the mind that's carried us into this classroom. It's the physical body that's walked here, but it's done so because the mind has said, I want to go to this program. Take me. Yes, sir. So the mind carries us to the next body. And therefore, what we think of is crucial. That kind of training we're not getting. We're being trained in engineering or teaching or this thing. But that training, what should I think of? There was a king, actually. I'll tell you this story briefly. There was a king who was cursed to die. And the curse was that in 7 days, you'll die. Yeah. And he was a young man and had everything, the kingdom, the whole works. 7 days, you're going to die. So he was very intelligent. I mean, he could have said, okay, I've got 7 days left, throw a big party, cram in as much as I can in those last 7 days. Instead, he went to a holy place And holy people came to be there because they came to know the king's going to die. And he asked them, I have 7 days left. What should I hear about? What should I remember? What should I think about? That was his question. You can consider, if you got the notice like that, 7 days left. What do I do? Go on vacation? Cram in as much, you know, speedy life as I can? So the king thought, what should I do? What should I hear about? What should I speak about? What should I remember? What should I think of? And he was actually very thoughtful. He asked them, should I think about Krishna? Krishna means God. Should I think about Krishna? There's so many things. The newspapers are full of things to talk about and think about. So many books, so many radio channels. They didn't have the internet in those days, but you know, so many things. Facebook, you know, should I get on Facebook and talk to everyone for 7 days? And he said, should I think about Krishna? And the sage, chief of the sages, he said, this is very good. Congratulations. Your question is super excellent, and actually this is the right answer. Because whatever I think of determines my next life. It could take me up, it could take me down. You know, the people who have low thoughts, and those low thoughts can take them to a low destination. So we have more refined thoughts, they'll take us to a better destination. But in the material world, all the destinations are temporary. I go higher, but I come down again in the next level. I go lower, well, gradually I come up again in the next level. But I'm still going round and round, I'm not really getting anywhere. But if I fix my mind on Krishna, on God, then I can go to God. And that's the permanent destination. Yes?
Are you trying to say that what you believe in will happen?
No. I'm not saying that what you believe in will happen. I'm saying that, you know, suppose I believe that I'll become king of KwaZulu-Natal. It's not that just by thinking it, it will happen. Maybe someone else, you know, next block over is thinking, don't let that guy become king. You know? So it's not just whatever I think happens. But what I think of fills my mind. And what fills my mind determines my next destiny. Just like you're thinking of becoming a teacher. So it doesn't mean that you will become a teacher just by thinking about it. You know, you have to enroll here, sit for your exams, do the study, and all of that. But because you're thinking of it, it takes you in that direction, and it can happen. Not just by thinking. But thinking takes me in that direction. It's your thinking that's brought you here. It's thinking that'll bring someone to a place where he can get drunk. Or it's thinking that takes a person to a library. Thinking is what, it's our thoughts that take us where we're going to go. Right? How we've trained our minds. Sometimes if our mind is not trained, we get diverted, right? I sit down to study for my exams, and instead it's like all of a sudden, you know, I'm over here, and I'm over there, and I'm over in the next place. Because the mind is like that, right? It goes... We need to grab the mind, get control of the mind. Or it gets control of us, drags us around. So that's part of yoga. Yoga means controlling the mind, fixing the mind. Then what do I fix it on? It should be fixed on God. Yeah, but the mind fixed on God, I'll act in God consciousness, and the next destination becomes Africa. Was there another question? Yes.
So right now, I'm living like the Adam.
You're living life up?
The Adam.
Hold on a second, let me come in. Gets a little loud. And then you can speak up.
I was asking, am I living the life of the Adam?
You're living the life of?
The Adam.
Adam?
Adam, pastor.
Is he living the life of the other him?
Of the other you?
Yeah, like the past life. Is he living that life
okay.
now?
Okay. Are you living the life of the other you? In one sense, yes. Just like here, as a student, you're living the life that was built by that other you, you know, the you that was in grade school. Right? It's actually the same you. It's not that somebody else was sitting in grade school and now you're sitting here. You were sitting in grade school. You remember when you were sitting behind that little desk.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, they were saying, well, when it goes this way, it's a B. When it goes that way, it's a D. When it goes this way, it's a P. When it goes that way, it's a Q. You all remember when you were doing that, right? That means you were there. I don't remember what room you were sitting in. You don't remember what room I was sitting in. So you're you and I'm me. I was sitting in America somewhere doing that. You were sitting here, I guess, in South Africa doing that. So you're a separate person, I'm a separate person. You're the same person that you were when you had the little child's body and you were learning your ABCs. And you'll be the same person when you die. Maybe you'll be more educated, more, you know, your body will be different, you'll have had a whole life of experience, but it'll be you. So you're the same person, but you're creating your future. And your past has created your present. So everything's in your hands. Which way do you want to go? You want to leave it to chance, kind of like, well, whatever happens, close your eyes and hope for the best? Or do you want to consider these topics, you know, think about it, and maybe adopt a practice that will fix your mind so that your next destination is not just kind of like, well, whatever happened. Bhakti yoga means how to fix the mind, how to focus the mind on higher understanding, on our relationship with God. Yeah. I'm going to get closer.
Because the question says we will live more than once.
Yeah.
So the mere fact that we're saying we live more than once comes to a claim. My question comes to the mere fact that I have lived before,
yeah,
and I'm living now,
yeah,
and I will live beyond.
Yeah.
So my question is, in my pre-life, the one that I do not remember, did I pave myself to be the person that I am?
Yes. In your previous life, you paved the way for what you are now.
For what I am now. And so now I'm paving my way to what I am.
Exactly.
So what is controlling all of that? Who's going to give me that force, that life form in the next life?
Well, nature does that. There are higher authorities, just like here in school, there are higher authorities that determine, you know, if you graduate or not, or, you know, what happens. So nature has higher authorities, there are higher laws. And that determines where you're going to go next. There's a lot. It's like, you know, you put your hand in the fire, you'll get burned. You know.
So do I, the body that I'm going to be in my next life?
God determines through his angels. Was there another question? How are you doing? Yes?
Will this process ever end?
Say?
Will this process ever end?
Is there an end to all of this?
Yeah.
Yes and no. No, there's no end to it. It just keeps going on and on and on and on. It's just like cycles, you know, they just keep going and going. One life, finished. Next life, finished. Until You get liberation from that cycle. Until you're freed from that cycle. You know, like if you were trapped in a drying machine, you know, a tumbler. You just keep going around and around and around and around until finally someone opened the door and, you know, turned off the button. And you can say, okay, let me out of here. So how do we get out of this cycle of birth and death? It's by reviving our connection with Krishna, God. That gets us out of this cycle. Otherwise, we just keep going round and round and round. Another question? Yes?
What you're talking about sounds very philosophical and abstract. I'm not saying that it's not believable and trustworthy. How did you come to realize deep realizations like the transmigration of the soul? Because you sound very convinced.
Okay. This is all like philosophical theory. How does one become convinced of this?
How did I become convinced
of this? Basically two ways. One is, read the books. There's so many arguments, there's so much reason and logic. So you read the books and you say, well, that makes sense, that makes sense. Or, I don't know about that. And then you ask someone, you know, who's been studying it. No, that doesn't seem to make sense. Well, he's asking questions. So you study, you ask questions, and any education, any science that you're studying. You read the books, and you ask your questions, and you think about it, you puzzle over it, and gradually, you know, the first day you say, I don't understand this, you know. Equations with the, you know, quadratic equation. What's quadratic? Doesn't it? Nothing makes sense, you know, at first sight. You spend more time with it, and pretty soon you're solving quadratic equations like brushing your teeth. So one thing is studying, and especially studying in the company of others who are experienced in the subject, because as you study here with your teachers. That's the first thing. And the second thing is a practice of purifying the mind. This chanting purifies the mind. And as the mind becomes purified, then we can see things more clearly. It's not just theoretical. Just like I've got my glasses, and when I put them on, I can see things more clearly, especially if they've been cleaned. If they're all dusty and dirty, then I put them on and everything's granular. But with the glasses are clean, then I see things clearly. So this mind is for seeing things clearly. And this chanting of Hare Krishna purifies the mind. Or the practice of bhakti yoga, all sorts of things, purifies the mind. The mind becomes clear. Mind becomes steady. Again, we talked about the mind going, that, you know, the mind doesn't get a grasp on anything. When the mind's steady, when the mind's peaceful, when the mind's clear, then you can see things. Things make sense.
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm going to think about it more deeply when I have more time.
Good, very good.
And you can't challenge an argument if I don't understand what the argument is.
Thank you. That's the process. You think about it deeply, and then you come back, maybe you have a question, maybe you want the next book to make you see what it says, you know, further about the time. At the same time, when you add this chant, it also makes the subject come alive. And we can say that God helps from within. God helps from within. If you're sincere, if you're looking to understand the truth, God helps you from within. How am I doing on time? We're up.
No.
We have a little more.
15 more.
15 more minutes. Great. I can say some more things, but I can answer some more questions. Say some more things. Okay. Let me focus my mind. Well, in these books, you'll find a lot of information. The Bhagavad Gita is the basic book for explaining this science and this transmigration of the soul, how the soul is moving from body to body, is explained throughout the Bhagavad Gita. This is the basic book for understanding these things. This book, Veda, is a newer book that came out. This is writings by different students of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. And several of the articles deal with these topics also. So you'll find more information. I have an article in here. It deals with a case, actually, investigated by a scientist, a doctor, psychiatrist, in America at the University of Virginia. And what he was doing was investigating cases of children, 5 years, 6 years, who seemed to remember a previous life. Generally, we don't remember anything. You know, here we are, I don't know anything about it. But there are cases of children who seem to remember a previous life. And they talk about their previous family, and they talk about where they lived, and they talk about where their house was. It's strange, right? They talk about where their house was. They mention the names of people. They express sometimes a desire to go back to that place. So he investigates these cases in a scientific way. And sometimes a family is found corresponding to what the child remembers. And there is such... There's a child, I tell about this case, a child who was talking about a life in another town, you know, a couple hundred miles away. The father knew of that town. He was connected to the railroad, so he was working for the railroad, so he was able to make some inquiries. He found out about a family that matched the description. And a woman there had died, and the experiences that his daughter was talking about corresponded to the experiences of that woman. There are many, this doctor collected, maybe 1,000 cases or so like this. So this is suggestive. It's evidence that suggests reincarnation, that we move from body to body. So in these books you'll find philosophy and some articles also that explain these things in the contemporary context. I met actually that doctor. We were at a conference together. And in the circles of scientific investigation that he moves in, this question of whether we live more than once is called the survival question. It's called the survival question. Is there some aspect of us that survives bodily death? You know, in ordinary terms, survival question is, you know, how do I get some food? How do I get some water in the desert? How do I, you know, suck the bullets? That's the survival question. But in this context, the survival question is there some aspect of our personality? Is there some aspect of our being that survives the death of the body? That's the survival question. So I met this doctor at a conference, and he said to me, you know, I think the question of survival matters. Don't you? I think the question of survival matters. So you can ask yourself that question. Does it matter? Is this something that I ought to think about? Is this one little life all I should, you know, what do they call that? They call it planning, right?
Right.
Planning.
Planet.
Planning.
Planning.
Yeah, like here I am and I do things like, I start, if you've ever flown on a plane recently, at least through Johannesburg, maybe it's here in Durban, there are these posters for an investment company. Have you seen those investment company posters, right? So what's the poster? It shows a young guy and he's like looking at himself 40 years from now. And he says to himself, I'm really glad that you invested at the right time. Good going. Good going. Or there's another one, and his wife is saying to him, I'm so proud of you that you did the right thing at the right time, so now we're sitting on a good financial cushion. So that's the theme. There's like 5 or 7 of those posters, you know. You planned, you had your eye on the ball, and so now, 50 years later, you're getting the good result. You're living in a good house with good money, and a good income, and your wife's happy, and your kid's going to college, and all of that. Plan. How far do we plan? Congratulations, you planned for your future. Now you've got a nice home, your wife's happy, your kid's going to college, and you're going to die, and you don't have the slightest idea where you're going to go next. Congratulations, idiot. You know, you've only planned this far. Everyone plans, but they plan for, you know, the next half hour, the next hour, the next week. Or if they're really on top of things, they plan, you know, they think 40 years ahead. But if there's more than this one lifetime, then real planning means, what happens after that? Am I just going to kind of leave that to the wind? Not plan for it, not think about it, just let, well, whatever happens, close my eyes and say, yeah. That's the most important thing. There's an expression, there's a saying in Bengali, everything's tested at the time of death. Just like here, you sit for your exam. Everything's, okay, it's great that you attend the classes, it's great that you study. Everything's tested at the exam time. That's the crucial time. And if you've done your studies and you've been focused and you've been in the class, then we expect that you'll do well on your exam. But that's the test, it's your exam. What's the final exam? You say, I saw the schedule there, final exams, or there's some exam schedule. But the final exams that you take here are not your final exams. Final exam comes at the time of death. That's the final exam. And are we going to pass? And it's not just a pass-fail exam, but it's like you can go up to a better life, you can go down to a lower life. Actually, all of that is fail. Because we keep going around in the drying machine. Hey, come on in. They're next class?
No,
there are targets. We have space for you here up front. There's space over here. Lots of space. School visit. School visit. Okay. Welcome to the new visitors. We've been talking about the understanding that this one life is not everything. That the soul is eternal. That you live after the body dies. And therefore you live also before the body is born. The soul is not born, the soul doesn't die, but it travels from one life to the next. As you've traveled from childhood to youth, and you'll travel on to old age, that means changing bodies from the little body to the young person's body, then to the old person's body. So the consciousness or the soul travels on for the next body at the time of death. That's capsule summary of what we've been talking about before you came in. Before you came in, you were somewhere. Now you're here. When you walk out, you'll be someplace else. It's not that you popped into existence when you walked in. So before you were born, you were someplace else. Now you're here. When you die, you'll go someplace else. And what we were just talking about when you came in is that death is the final exam. Death is the final exam, when everything is tested. Your whole life, what did it come to? You lived your whole life, and what's the sum total of your life? When you add it all up, when you, you know, pull the lever at the end and get the total, or you press the little button, no levers anymore, you press the little button and you get the total. What did it come to? That's all tested at the time of death. And what your life comes to at the time of death depends on what you did in this life. What kind of consciousness we developed? Did we develop low consciousness? Did we develop high consciousness? Or did we develop the highest consciousness, which is consciousness of God? That's for us to decide. What's low consciousness? Low consciousness is like the animals. The animals, what are the animals busy with? What do they care about? Philosophy?
Food.
Huh?
Food.
Yeah. Animals care about food. Eating. Where's food? Where's food? What else?
Sex.
Sex. Animals are very interested in sex.
Defense.
They're always, you know, the animal, the bird is like eating, but it's eating like this. Always looking to see whether it's going to be attacked, right? So it's interested in eating, in defense, sex. Hunting, what are they hunting for? Food, right. On one side they're hunting for food, on the other side they're watching out whether they're being hunted. And sleep. You know, the bear is looking for a good place to spend the winter. And all the birds, the reptiles, they're all mammals. They all want to sleep. So we also have these things. We also, we sleep, we have sex, we watch out for ourselves. But if that's all we do, what are we? Animals. We're just animals. And you can say polished animals. You know, because the animal is eating on the little bowl on the, you know, dog's eating a little bowl on the ground, or without the bowl, he's just got a bone or something. We're eating in a restaurant. But it's eating.
Sorry, just one. I think what motivates me to actually choose a particular path or whatever, is if the end result, if the end product, if the end destination is better than what I have now, then it's a motivation to go on a trip.
Exactly.
You know. So can you describe, you talked about like there's this unending cycle of birth and death and suffering and all of that, but we can be liberated from this cycle. So obviously that liberation is much more exciting, much more fulfilling than this current temporal reality.
But that's just negative. Like, I'm in jail, and I'm sleeping on an iron bed, and I'm eating crummy prison food, and breaking rocks, and so on. And what's freedom? Freedom is you don't break rocks anymore, you don't eat crummy prison food anymore, they don't lock the bars at 7:30 at night. You know, that's negative, that's what it's not. Positively, there should be good food, there should be happy engagement, not just cessation of prison life, But when I get out, there should be positive. So that's described in the Vedic literature. Because God or Krishna is a person, he has activities. Just as you have activities, I have activities here. God has activities. But what are his activities? They're not the frustrating activities of this material world. Why are these activities frustrating? Either because I don't get what I want, or because I do get what I want, and then it's taken away by time.
So you're saying that the end goal is extremely blissful,
and permanent.
Impermanent.
Now you can take a shot of something and be extremely blissful, but that's for like an hour or 15 minutes, whatever it is, and then you're in the pits, or you're back where you started. But permanent, joyful, blissful, permanent, and with knowledge, with full knowledge. Nobody becomes happy by being ignorant. That's why we're in school. So, in the material world, we're always battling against ignorance. We start off from ignorance, and generally we wind up in ignorance also. We think we know, but we don't know what we really need to know. But the nature of the spiritual world is, as ignorance is constitutional here, as ignorance is the default, the natural position here, knowledge is the natural position. Coming and going is the natural state of affairs here. Permanence is the natural state there. And as suffering is the default here, happiness is the default there.
So it actually makes sense. A thinking person would want to pursue that life, right?
Sure.
But the challenge I have is sometimes I don't want to give up things.
You don't want to give up anything.
Even though I know what you're saying, I want to have a little bit of the both.
What do you want? What are you being asked to give up?
I don't know how to say it without feeling embarrassed, because I know you might call me a dog or something.
You dog.
Time you called me that. Just having fun in moderation.
What's fun?
Having a drink with my friends.
We have more fun. You think that you have to give up fun? My proposition is that this is small time fun, and we have better fun. We have better fun. You go with your friends and you're singing. But that singing is not the best singing. This is better singing. We're also singing. We're also dancing. And our singing and dancing is better singing and dancing. You have your food. We have better food. I challenge you to eat. You get some better food, brother? Okay. We challenge you. You will not find better food than we're getting. Come spend some time with us and see how we eat it. It's the healthiest, it's the tastiest. So we don't say no eating. But for example, we say, don't eat me. Because we have better food. We don't say don't eat me and starve. Come get better food. We don't say don't meet the demands of the body. Don't sleep. Don't eat. Don't have sex. Don't defend yourself. That's not the purpose of your life. That should be regular. Because if it's unregulated, you'll be unhappy. It's like eating. If your eating is not controlled, you'll be unhappy. If you just eat anything, even a child, he wants to eat a doorknob or something. He's told, no, don't put the doorknob in your mouth. And then later, You know, like you go to the doctor, he says, you know, this is not good for you. Don't eat that. Or people don't have, you know, basic knowledge, and they're told, you know, make sure it's washed, make sure it's clean. Because if you just eat it, see it and eat it, you're going to be unhappy. You have to eat food that's clean, you have to eat food that's healthy, you have to eat food which is not too much. Stuff it in till you can't possibly fit anymore, and then you wait 5 minutes and stuff some more in. You're going to be unhappy. Even the Vedic medical science says, you know, if you eat regularly, same time of day, same sort of food every day, same sort of amount, you'll be happy. You know, you'll live longer, you'll feel better. You have a routine, you know, you're not just like, you know, helter-skelter. So that's called regulation. Same thing with your sleeping. If you don't, you're going to bed, you know, all hours, and then you're waking up at who knows when, and sometimes it's this way and sometimes it's that way. And your life is kind of like, gets mixed up. Your body doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing because it doesn't have a default setting. Like imagine you fire at a computer, sometimes it starts here, sometimes it starts there, and sometimes it starts in the middle of something, and sometimes it's like doing fireworks, and sometimes it's, you know, and with no rhyme or reason to it, you have a hard time, you know, well, where do I start? First you have to bring it down to, you know, where's the start button, and then you can maybe begin your work. So it's programmed so that it has kind of a normal default that you can depend on. So yoga bhavati dukkha, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the person who's regulated in eating, in sleeping, in work, in recreation, can overcome all pains by practicing yoga. Krishna doesn't say don't work, don't eat, don't sleep, but regulate. We don't say no eating. We say regulated eating. We didn't say no sleep. Irregular sleep. We don't say no sex. Sex should also be regular. That's what marriage is for. Oh! Okay, you know, don't believe me. What's AIDS all about?
Alright, makes sense.
What's AIDS all about? Unregulated sex, right? Krishna is saying, if you're regulated, you'll get free from all miseries. And people are saying, why regulated, you know? Whatever I want to do, you know, why should I have to control anything?
So what if you're an alcoholic?
Sorry?
What if you're an alcoholic?
What if it has alcohol addicts?
What's if you're an alcoholic?
What if you're
alcohol addict?
Yes.
Well, that's something you want to get control of. That's something, because you're not going to be happy by that. And people are addicted. Someone's addicted to alcohol, someone's addicted to drugs, someone's addicted to like sex, someone's addicted to eating, the world is full of addictions. So you want to get control of your life. So it's not your senses controlling you. It's you controlling your senses. Like if you're in a car, you don't want the car to just be going wherever it wants to go. You want to have control of that steering wheel so that the car goes where you want it to go. That's called yoga. It means getting control.
So you're talking about control for higher levels of happiness.
Yeah.
It's not exactly. Like you're killed.
Yes, you don't want to kill your fun. But we're saying this is where the real fun is. It's not in, you know, temporary 5-minute business and extreme this, extreme that. Real enjoyment comes from coming to a higher path. And that becomes steady enjoyment. Otherwise, all the enjoyment we get here, it's like, you know, go for it, and then you got it. And then it's gone, and then you got to go for it again. And the whole world's going crazy. Trying to grab an enjoyment that keeps escaping. Where did we go? And when society is built in such a way that they're encouraging, no, look here, look there, look here, look there. Buy it fast before it goes away. And then you buy it and then it breaks. So, is vague that you see? No, there's a higher happiness. You don't have to spend money on it. But you have to look within yourself and learn the techniques for getting mastery of yourself, control, regulation, so that you can experience that higher life.
These books, like I was introduced, called Veda, Secrets from the East. They generally go in for 60 bucks, but because this week is our promotional week for it, they go in for 20. And if you like, you can get a copy. Tomorrow, we're having our final, this week has been a week-long campus tour, where I guess they're moving to all the campuses in UKZN and MIT, DUT, different places. And it's climaxing at our center in Chatsworth tomorrow, the Temple of Understanding. So we're taking students from campus to the temple. It is a tourist attraction, one of the largest temples in the Southern Hemisphere. So you really want to come see it. It's stunningly beautiful. And if you're interested in that, then you should tick the column on the register that says temple visit. Okay. You can do that on the way out if you haven't done this before.
What time?
All right. We'll leave at 12 o'clock. We should be back by 3:30.
Do you contact us or?
If you've ticked,
okay.
Then you contact.
All right.
Right? Okay. And then we should. Okay, yeah, so if you want one of these, they're going to be up there in the back. You take them. And you can grab them. And yeah. Should we have a centrifugal for the ladies?
Yeah.
Is anybody want here, Tom? Or you have to rush off?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Wait, we're done.
No.
Oh, no.